The Cronulla Sharks saga is one of intrigue and bizarreness. This saga began back in 2011 with the appointment of sports scientist Dr. Stephen Dank. 2 years later, the club was embroiled in a drug cheating scandal which saw the club go to rock bottom. However, within 3 years of their coach getting sacked and rehired, they finally won their first comp before salary cap dramas continued to escalate, causing the coach to be suspended indefinitely and doubts over whether they should keep their premiership. And even today, the rumours are still running hot. They can't buy a top-name player to save their lives and have just sacked their coach. What's gone wrong with the Shire? This is League Legacy, Season 2, Episode 4, The Cronulla Sharks, a premiership at all costs. Welcome, everyone, to the fourth episode of the second season of League Legacy, the Cronulla Sharks, a premiership at all costs. I'm AJ Luke Antonio. Joining me today is Reece Sullivan. Reece, it's nice to be back.
Oh, it definitely is. You know, I haven't spoken about sports in so long. Usually I've just been typing about it. So, yeah, it's going to be fun to be back.
So would you like to explain to everyone what your kind of mini project is at the moment? Because it's quite a lot of work you've gone into this.
Yeah, so I've been writing a few articles, just a few blog posts, kind of developing my writing style, and I'm going to be launching a project at the back end of this year's NBA season, which is going to detail the top 75 players in NBA history, just because, you know, next season is going to be the NBA's 75th anniversary. They had a celebration for the 50 greatest players 25 years ago for the 50th anniversary. So I figured, why not? Top 75. It's going to be a lot of work. I made a top 100 ages ago, but it was very raw. There wasn't much actual like process behind it. So yeah, this one's going to be a bit different.
Sounds very fun indeed and an interesting project. I'm sure there'll be a lot of debate about that one. But what we're going to be doing here today is we're going to be going through the Cronulla Sharks timeline. Obviously, there's a lot to get through. We're going to start in 2011 and we're going to work our way down to the mess that the club was in recently. But spoiler alert, and Sharks fans have been in my inbox all the last 2 weeks ever since I announced I was doing this episode saying, oh, talk about the positives, talk about the positives. We've got a lot of negatives to talk about first, so sit back.
There will be a lot of positives, especially about, first of all, the rebuild they did from the downfall of the Stephen Dank saga. Yep. Obviously, their premiership win.
Yep.
And then, you know, the work John Morris did. Those are all going to be positives.
100%.
There are a lot of negatives. So sorry, Cronulla fans.
Without further ado, we are getting into it. So Cronulla, after the 2008 preliminary final, kind of sucked, if we're being honest. 2009, they were 15th, saved by the fact the Roosters were fucking terrible. Thank you, Brad Fittler, for being on the piss of the Holiday Inn for that. So by the end of halfway through 2010, Ricky Stewart gets the arse. So Shane Flanagan comes in round 20 and they win their two out of their last four games. One, an upset win over the Roosters, and then a win in Trent Barrett's last home game at Shark Park against the Titans. So there's a good foundation there of some good core players. Obviously, Paul Gallen's there. Luke Douglas, who at this point has a miraculous streak of consecutive games. But then you got other young guys in there as well, like Albert Kelly was starting to become a class player. John Morris were a bit of experience. Ben Pomeroy was a good player.
Obviously, you had Gal.
I said Gal.
I didn't realize.
Anthony Tupo.
Nathan Gardner at the back, one of the most exciting fullbacks in the league.
Individual try.
Yep, even though the Sharks were absolutely terrible.
100%.
You also had Scott Porter, who was an absolute standout in that 2009 awful season, then played six games in 2010 and basically fell off the face of the earth.
Because they were developing a young kid who we'll get to in a minute. So the Sharks, to start in the 2011 offseason, hired sports scientist Stephen Dank to the fold. Now, he had been a sports scientist for a number of years, and this is not anything to do that we're supporting him at all. So eventually, Stephen Dank provided sworn testimony about what involvement he had at Cronulla, and he injected in this supplements program two growth hormone releasing peptides. Obviously, the main one being CJC1295, which I think was it Shandor Earl?
Yeah, that was the one that Shandor Earl got busted for basically smuggling.
Yeah, that was that one. And then there was the other one, GHRP6. Both substances are banned by both ASADA and WADA. Dank admits both were injected into Cronulla players. There are doubts about the players' liability, but they were also given lozenges and creams containing the peptides, and Dank directed their administration. So my question is, why the hell would you give so much control away from the group to a sports scientist?
I mean, it is an interesting one. Like, I get what you're saying there, but at the end of the day, you got to understand that when it comes to running a professional sports site, there are multiple different sort of outfits, I guess you'd say. Like, you have the training outfit, which is all your assistant coaches and your head coach. You have your workouts, which is run by another group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And sports science fits into that one of those categories. At the end of the day, the head coach, the assistant coaches, the board, they probably don't have a full understanding of what the sports scientists are putting into the players.
Yeah, 100%.
They might be able to Google some of the names of the substances to see that they're illegal, but generally they don't do it. They trust the scientists to make the right decision.
100%.
The problem was, Dank was someone who wanted to enhance his own reputation. He had bounced around so many clubs.
Manly was one.
Yep.
He hadn't joined Essendon at that stage.
That's correct. He just wanted to enhance his own reputation so he could earn as much money as possible. Part of that became having the players be injected with performance enhancers to enhance their performance, if you will.
And the thing is, unlike the Essendon thing, there was no correlation between improved performance and the drugs, because Cronulla in his period of employment up until May were running 14th.
Yeah, exactly. The Sharks, I mean, look, take a look at the ages of some of those guys in the Sharks side. They only had four players in the team that played games over the age of 30. Like, that team was young.
It was raw.
Exactly. And, you know, they had a lot of promising young players. Tyson Frizzell made his debut that year. Chad Townsend made his debut. Wade Graham came over from the Panthers. You know, you had Ricky Lattelli, Nathan Stapleton, Nathan Gardner, Jason Bakuya, CSC Avave, all players who today you'd look at and you would really recognize their names. But back in 2011, they were nobodies. They were still trying to make their mark in the NRL.
They're 100% still trying to make their mark. And the Sharks, I mean, they had a four-game winning streak, but then they would end up losing from round 19 all their games, including a shock upset loss to eventual Wooden Spooners Gold Coast, which culminated in David Mead's miraculous try. Other embarrassing loss, actually, they had a good win over Canterbury.
And a good win over South Sydney.
And South's 26-4.
But that was origin affected, I guess.
Let me have a look at the line. Yeah, it was. It was a split round.
Yeah.
Sean Corrigan in the centres for South Sydney.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Yeah, that's all you need to know. Centre partnership of Dylan Farrell and Sean Corrigan. That goes,
I mean, the Sharks pack was pretty good. Johnny Manor, John Morris, Luke Douglas, Jason McCuya. It's a good pack.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And, you know, even in their bench, Sam Tagatizi, Josh Cordoba, Talima Tautai, those are some solid players to have on the bench.
100%. So by this stage, Steve and Dank had already gone out the window, and they think, oh, we're not going to know anything about this. It'll get cleared out of the way, but we'll get on to actually what happened with that in a moment. But to 2012, on the back of a successful transfer spree that netted the likes of Todd Carney, after being sacked by the Roosters, this is important to note, Jeff Robson, Andrew Fifita, Bryce Gibbs, Ben Ross, and Sam Tagatese, Cronulla were basically on the brink of a top four for much of the 2012 season. And it all started to become downhill after a Monday night draw against the Roosters. And just so everyone knows, the Roosters were terrible. They're not the powerhouse of today. They were utter shit. Let's just take you through a few of the names in this side, just so you think, oh, I'm not making this up. Actually, Brayton and Aston wasn't playing. This might have been close to the best side we played all season.
Oh, that is some shade. That is some shade.
No, Brayford has to dog the Roosters at this stage, mate. What he did was, after a game, he said he'd not declared that he signed for anyone, not signed for the West Tigers. Guess what comes out 24 hours later?
He signed with the Tigers.
Bingo!
That whole saga, when I was 11, because that was when it happened, that whole saga confused me. And to this day, it still confuses me. Like, I have no idea why NASA decided it was a good idea to leave the Roosters, but...
You got to think of the Roosters at that time. They were a mess. Trent Robinson hadn't arrived yet. His football IQ definitely worsened since then because it spawns the legend of shit, Brave says.
I mean, shout out to Brian Smith for just breaking the Roosters in the space of two seasons.
To be fair, though, he has the front row he finished with became the nucleus of the premiership-winning side that we'd later see.
Outside of Martin Kennedy, of course.
Outside Martin Kennedy, who imported animals. but you
that is one team... of the, that is one of the weirdest like NRL-related stories you'll ever hear.
But back on track with Cronulla, it's important to note how they ended the season, and it was pretty shit end to the season. You had a 14-all draw. You lose to the Dragons. You lose, you get blown out by Canberra, and Canberra were pretty good, to be fair. They lose to Penrith in Golden Point, blow out the Warriors, get blown out by the Knights, evenly matched win against Souths, get beaten in the last minute by a Sisawunga blindside raid. You got to remember, this is before Monday Night Football went to shit. 2012 Monday Night Football was absolutely amazing.
You're not wrong. The problem. What happened? Like, this, okay, let's branch off a sec. What made Monday Night Football so bad?
Warren Smith.
Ooh.
Warren Smith. Warren Smith made Monday Night Football good. I think the introduction of Thursday Night Football.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because then all of a sudden, you know, you had just too many NRL days.
You look at the problem with
And it was spread too thin.
American football as well. Like, you got Thursday night football, collegiate sports on Friday, Saturday, and then you got Sunday and Monday for NFL as well. It's too much in a calendar schedule.
You would have, buddy, you'd have one game on Friday, and that's not enough. Friday is a prime time slot for the NRL. Games. And having just the one Friday night game is stupid.
100%. So, by that stage, they ended up going to Shark Park, and this was actually pivotal for their semi-final hopes because Todd Carney gets injured in this game, from memory. I think he hurts his ankle, and they risk him again in the qualifying final against Canberra, and he's done by halftime. He limps off, I think doing further damage, I think, in that game.
Yeah, they actually got lucky with that qualifying final because obviously Carney was hurt, but they didn't. They actually ended up having two backs on the bench. John Morris.
Oh, it was a torn Achilles.
Yeah, sorry, torn Achilles. And so they had John Morris on the bench in the 16, but then last second they put Wade Graham into the side and jumped at number 20. So at the end, they only had two forwards on the bench, which...
But they're playing Isaac Gordon at fullback.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're going up against a team that had David Shillington, Dane Tills, a young Josh Papali'i, Sean Fensom. You're not going to win many games with that lineup the Sharks had that day, especially with Carney going down.
Exactly right. So again, there's positive building blocks here for the Sharks, and I think too, I mean, largely carried by the Melbourne Storm, their New South Wales Cup team was going great guns, and yeah, they were starting to develop
that New South Wales Cup team. That merger, I think it only lasted like two seasons between the Storm and the Sharks.
It was pretty good.
That has to go down as one of the greatest New South Wales Cup teams of all time.
Pretty close, I'd say. But moving away now, 2013, they bring some more experience. They bring Michael Gordon, Chris Hyington, Luke Lewis, and Bo knows fuck all. Sorry, Bo Ryan, into the side. And then they start to debut some names. Sasaya Fekir, Tyrone Peachy, Tupu Sopawanga. But they lose Tyson Rizzo, which is a bit of a blow, and Jeremy Smith. But
I remember, I think a lot of people were saying at the start of this year that if Carney was healthy to start the year, obviously, you know, he was out injured to start.
I think he started the season.
Did he?
I think so, yeah. I think so. I'm just double-checking that to confirm it. Because there was that massive game at Shark Park. Yeah, he started at 5'8". There was that massive raucous at Shark Park following the fallout, which we'll get to in a second, about the supplements. Because Peter Sharp coached those first two games. I'm spoiling the bloody program here.
So it must have been just a minor tear. It wasn't a full tear.
Must have been. But
anyway, I'm pretty sure people were saying the Sharks were a smoky for the premiership in 2013.
Oh, 100% they were. They had some experience. They had some good players. Just a few inconsistent losses throughout the season really hurt them in the long run. They showed signs of their greatness when they blew the Roosters out in the first half in round 24. But then they showed their disappointment when they lost to Parramatta at Parramatta Stadium. So there's some inconsistencies throughout the season that ultimately costed them. But in February of 2013, the ACCC announced a year-long investigation had uncovered the widespread use of drugs in Australian sport, including some yet not approved for human use. So the Sharks' worst fears here, or at least those that are in the knowledge, are currently shitting themselves, wondering if they've been caught. So by then, by February 2013, the Sharks had somehow launched an investigation and the club denied distributing any illegal performance-enhancing substances to his players. Then 2 days later, Shane Flanagan owns up and says, oh yeah, we stopped the practices.
So before the season starts, okay? The season started March 10th that year? It's
7th.
The Sharks' first game was March 10th.
Yes. My bad.
Sharks' first game is March 10th. 2 days before they opened the game, Shane Flanagan was suspended indefinitely.
Correct.
And a day earlier, 14 Sharks players. We didn't know the identities.
Mm-hmm.
But 14 players had been named into a starters report. They were offered a 6-month ban up front. All of them declined. So,
because they said they were innocent.
Yeah. Because you got to remember, like I said at the beginning, the players, the coaches didn't know what Denk was putting into them.
Mm-hmm. So, 100%. So from there, Shane Flanagan is suspended indefinitely. Peter Sharp takes the reins as the club's period. Mark Noakes, David Givney, Conrad Schultz, and Darren Mooney are sacked by the club for the knowledge in the program. Betting suspended on the game, all of it. But somehow, the Sharks show some resilience and pull off the upset of the competition so far, beating the Titans, who had once again gone on a buying spree, 12 points to 10 in front of 18,000 at Endeavour Field. So that is pretty remarkable, but the drama is just beginning. Later that week, Chairman Damien Irvine quits as the club's chairman. And then they get some good news. Shane Flanagan gets reinstated and encourages the Sharks to go on a pretty impressive four-game losing streak. You could tell I was leading into that. You could just tell, but he's like, oh, AJ's going to do it, isn't he?
Yeah.
So from there, Wade Graham starts the interview with the infamous slides, snapback, thongs, just basically mortis.
Basically what you come to expect from 22-year-old Wade Graham.
That's true. So, and that caused all the interviews to be postponed until the end of the weeks. By August, all these interviews are completed, and you can see that the initial shockwave of those interviews kind of led to that four-game losing streak in many retrospects. But whilst those interviews were going on, they ended up going on a four-game winning streak of their own, beating Newcastle and Golden Point up at Newcastle, then the Sharks, Raiders, South Sydney. That was in origin period before getting blown out by Melbourne. And then another bad loss was against the Roosters, 40-0. But that Roosters team, I think, holds the NRL record for most times they've held a team to nil.
Yep, that's correct. That 2013 Roosters team was one of the most dominant defensive outfits you'll ever see in the NRL.
I could teach the current crop a few things.
Oh, you're not wrong.
So from there, they end up in fifth position before we enter seven tackle gate.
It's interesting that, you know, after the last interview, so the last interview was on the 23rd of August.
Yep.
So they went on after that to win, beat the Roosters.
As which, I mentioned earlier.
Like you mentioned, yep, that was a massive boil over. Then they beat Canberra. I think that was that ended up denying Canberra a place in the finals.
No.
No?
Because, Canberra were already out of finals contention at that point, and David Fern had already been sacked.
Okay, fair enough. But
Bryce Gibbs broke his try-scoring drought in this game.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he broke his, I think it was something like a six-year try-scoring drought.
Yeah, his last try before that was in the 05 grand final.
Exactly. What a, yeah. Ben Ross was at the line.
Look at those try scorers for the Sharks. Fecky, Gibbs, Lewis, Peachy, Robson, Ryan.
That's gold.
That is very much gold.
But now we get to seven tackle gate. My favorite subject to talk about.
Can we just say, North Queensland in 2013 and 2014 got absolutely decked in the finals both years?
I don't think 2012 was more dicked, in my opinion, than 2014.
No. No, it wasn't a knock on 2014, mate. I know you're a Roosters fan, but it was not a knock on.
What was the live decision?
Live decision was, well, there wasn't a live decision at the time, was there?
2014, I mean.
Did they bring in live decision? Yeah, they did too, actually. That was the first year.
Yeah, live decision was no try.
Decision was no try, yeah. But at the end of the day,
they weren't overturning that.
I know, but it should never have been a no try. It should have gone up as a try. Because how do you determine as the on-field ref that that ball went forwards?
The touchy was, I think the touch judge was in line with it from memory.
Whatever. Like,
and he had badge in the pocket anyway. But apart from that, this is irrelevant. Seven tackle gate. Now, the only explanation at the time that I could think of was that the referees mistakenly ruled a zero tackle.
Either that or they went the set restart rule about 7 years too early.
Maybe. But anyway. But anyway, they go down and score and they take a 12-8 lead in a half, or a 6-all lead. That would actually come back to bite them because enter the last 3 minutes of the game. Kalyn goes for the corner and the greatest single cover tackle since Scotty Sutton was made by John Morris in the corner. And the Sharks move on to play Manly, I think.
Yep, where I think they get stung by... Was that the game where they got stung by the short offsides?
I think
the,
so.
The short 10 metres, yeah.
Yes, that's correct. So they go on. I mean, Todd Carney was actually injured at this point, believe it or not. He got injured and was out for the season after the qualifying final. He got injured. He didn't play. And then Manly go on an upswing, and then they go to the grand final, and then they lose to the Rooters. So moving into 2014, the club's in a good space. However, the bombshell hits, doesn't it, Reese?
Well, first of all, let's be real. Even before the bombshell hit, okay, you know, The Sharks are shit.
You reckon?
Yeah.
So let's just, like, no. Shane Flanagan was, I'm talking to the bomb about Shane Flanagan getting the ass.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the other bomb. But yeah, okay.
Well, the other bomb, the Sharks decimated. Jason Bakuya goes, Isaac DeGuis goes, Peach goes, Pomeroy goes. Sharks fans might still be quietly cheering about Ben Pomeroy leaving. Matty Wright.
Pomeroy was such a bad NRL player. I don't understand. Like, he wasn't bad in terms of rugby league player. But at the NRL level, he was horrid.
And then the Sharks bring in some world-class players like Blake Ashford, Matt Pryor, Pat Politone, Daniel Holdsworth.
Oh.
I mean, Daniel Holdsworth's only remembered for that 40-meter field goal.
You know, if those aren't names that get you aroused, I don't know what's wrong with you. But so they had, at the time, or so 2013,
mm-hmm.
Okay, this team had a total of 24 players who had representative experience.
Now?
No, at the end of 2014.
Are you serious?
Yep, they had Todd Carney, Sasai Fecky, Andrew Fifita, Paul Gallen, Bryce Gibbs, Michael Gordon, Wade Graham, Chris Hyington, Luke Lewis, Michael Leisha, John Morris, Pat Politone, Matt Pryor, Vitali Rakika, Anthony Tupou, and CSC Avave.
Who did Michael Leisha play for?
He had played. Let me just take a look. He managed to make an appearance for City in 2014.
That just proved how Mickey Mouse City Country turned into.
Yeah, pretty much, mate.
Like, it's no disrespect to the player whatsoever, but City Country, probably since 2010, was turning into Mickey Mouse. Yeah. It was turning into a B-grade Super League tri-series.
Because you just had so many players pulling out. Obviously, you couldn't select test side players.
Because they were having the test the next night.
But then also, like, the B-level players were pulling out. So it was basically C and D grade sides.
Basically. I got a question for you, Reese. Would this Cronulla Sharks side beat Halifax from the 1997 World Club Challenge?
That's a tough one.
I mean, I'm just going to take you through the side that finished the season.
I mean, what? Who do you ask that on Twitter again? Was that the question you asked Andrew Ferguson?
I asked that question on Friday, on Saturday night, but I put on the Twitter to Rugby League Digest and League Freak. NRL is turning into 1997 World Club Challenge. And he's like, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
And we discussed that in Super League. So if you want to go check that out, go ahead. Because
Well, I'll just leave you on this one. Current Bulldogs versus 1997 Hunter Mariners.
I'll go the Mariners by 10.
By 10? I would have gone by more.
So this Shark side that was absolutely gutted at this point, remember Asada handed 17 past and present players show call notices by Asada. These suspensions were backdated two-year penalties. So Paul Gallen was denied the opportunity to play for Australia at the Four Nations. Same too with...
That 2014 Four Nations side has to be one of the worst Australian teams ever selected, and yet they still won the tournament.
No, they didn't.
Didn't they?
They lost to New Zealand because they threw a forward pass when Matiadi was in the corner.
Oh, that's right.
Again, somehow I could pull this knowledge out of my backside.
But still, somehow one of the worst Australian teams ever selected was better than England. And they're expecting us to believe that these Great Britain and Ireland tours that they're planning over the next few years are going to bring international rugby league back.
Was that 2014 Four Nations where Ryan Hall had that fingertip no try?
I think so, yeah.
Because he never... I spoke to him about his representative career. He's like, we got robbed against Australia. So the Sharks at the moment are practically useless. They hadn't won a game since round 20. Peter Sharp had been sacked and replaced by James Shepherd.
Can I just say, how bad do you have to be to get sacked as an interim coach?
I think it has something to do with the side, secretly.
And the worst part was he got more chances too.
So let's just go through. Because of these suspensions, we had to have some players debut. Michael Leisha debuted in 2014, for fuck's sake, and got picked for City Country. I'm sorry, but...
Hang on a sec. I'm curious now. I've got to go through this City team. Like,
how Mickey Mouse is it?
I can't not go through this team.
I had a coaching clinic with them when I was 10.
Okay, so it ended up being a draw this game, 26 all. This was the City team. You've got to remember, this is 2014, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Matt Moylan, Daniel Tupou,
yep.
Dylan Walker, Will Hopewate,
mm-hmm.
Jorge Tafua, Josh Reynolds, Adam Reynolds, Andrew Fifita, Bo Falloon, Aaron Woods, Tony Williams. Their captain was Ryan Hoffman,
yeah.
Jamie Bure, David Clemmer, Tim Grant, Michael Leisha, and Darcy fucking Lussick.
Freddie was coaching this team, right?
Freddie was coaching, yes.
Oh, God. Explain and some of his state of origin selections.
On paper, they were better than the countryside. Do you want to hear that one?
No, we're going to run out of time if we go through every Mickey Mouse team. But the funny thing is, with Cronulla, when the drug suspensions kicked in, guess who they had playing at lock that first game back from suspension?
Oh, God. That first... who?
Blake Ashford.
At lock.
Yep. They led 6-0 at half time.
Oh, God. Canberra. Between 2013 and 2015.
This was Sticky's first year, so we can't be too harsh on him. But
like, shout out to Anthony Milford. He was the only shining light in that Canberra side, 2013-2014.
Fair enough. So Shane Flanagan at this point had been suspended. And we just got some breaking news. Jai Arrow is out of origin for him being given a $35,000 fine.
Ooh.
This is why you don't breach the bubble, kids.
Don't be horny.
So, as I was saying, Shane Flanagan had been suspended at this point and decided to become a recruitment officer for Cronulla. Unofficial, ordered, of course.
He was ordered to have no contact with the team.
Again, not official. Not official at all, but he's managed to sign some worldies. Ben Barber, Michael Ennis, Jason McCuya, Jared Buell. He also signed Jack Bird and the immortal of Mitch Brown.
Can I just quickly say, never include Gerard Beale and Weldies in the same sentence ever again. just a future reference.
So the Sharks ended up losing their first four games before a lovely trip to the Sydney Football Stadium. I was at this game and Jack Bird was making his starting debut at 5'8", and he carved up the Roosters.
I mean, that was sort of – everyone sort of knew who Jack Bird was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that debut
– was pretty special. I was there. And then
it has to be put down as one of the best debuts ever, like right up there with Joey's starting debut. Not his official debut, his starting debut. Yeah, and then also, like, you know, Amos Roberts type thing.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I want to – so that gets the Sharks motoring as such. They beat Newcastle, and then they beat South Sydney in Sharknado.
That was
I was on holiday for game. This game. I was on holidays up at the luxury Gold Coast, and no, I wasn't doing a Brett Todd.
You were like, what, 8 years old at the time? Of course you weren't.
No, I was 11. I was 11. So, yeah, they won 18-10, and then they've been inconsistent, and then they end up the year in sixth, I think. And then they go and they beat South Sydney 28-12 in the Mickey Mouse qualifying final and then get blown the fuck out by North Queensland.
I mean, you got to remember that qualifying final was just the right to play either Brisbane or North Queensland.
And this was when they were playing Ben Barber as a Mr. Fix-It off the bench.
That had to be a stupid decision. Like, you know, take a look at that North Queensland side compared to that Shark side. You know, go through position by position. I think the Sharks, the only like actual position battles they win is Val Holmes versus Antonio Winterstein. And maybe Wade Graham versus Ethan Lowe.
Ennis against Granville?
Bro, 2015 Granville was on another level.
Oh, that hit different. That 100%
2015 Granville was on another level.
It was, 100%. So,
if not for Cam Smith, he would have been the Australian hooker that year, I reckon.
100%. So, from there, the Sharks have to reset and reload for 2016. And again, they signed some... before we go anywhere, I actually want to bring something up, actually. Andrew Fifita and David Fifita were at a club football game. You might remember this, Reese.
I think I do, yeah.
Verbally abusing three referees. And in this era, and I'm going to say this publicly, if you abuse a referee, don't ever talk to me again. Like, you know it from being a basketball official. I know it from being a rugby league referee. We hate it. And I think we need to come down stronger than this. If you are found guilty of abusing a referee... So a little bit of a hiccup there. My panelist had to leave for reasons outside of his external control. So you're going to have the back end of this episode with myself. So the Sharks from 2016 onwards, they signed up some absolute worldies. James Maloney, good player. Joseph Paulo, Chad Townsend. Debude, Kurt Capewell, 100%. Good player. They let go of some good players. Michael Gordon left, Jeff Robson left, Blake Ashford, as Reese and I were touching on earlier. Absolute world-class player. And also Tinarau Arona left as well. So the Sharks started the year 1-3. They lost to the Cowboys, blew out the Dragons, and then lost to Manly. And then embarked on this glorious winning run from round 4 against the Storm to round 20 against Newcastle, beating basically nearly everyone in the comp, doing a full circle. They came to the Gold Coast on a Monday night against the Titans, and they drew 18-all. David Mead got in the bin for a professional foul. The Titans were always coming back in at them, and they ended up getting the win. So from there, they end up on a skid. They lose 3 straight to Canberra, St George, and South Sydney. They pull off a win against the Roosters, and then they lose to Melbourne in a battle for the minor premiership. They go to Canberra. Of course, they do that massive Viking clap bullshit, and they shut them up. Michael Ennis doing the famous Viking clap at the end, trying to provoke the crowd, and, you know, provoke them. They go and play North Queensland. Same story as 2018. Even with a young Kalen Ponga on the edge, they're just too good. The Sharks get through to the grand final. They play the Storm. First half started all right. They go through that blindside play, go on the inside to Barber, scoots in under the post and scores. From there, the Sharks start to fall away a little bit. You're like, oh no, is the dream going to come to an end? They go out to 12-8, up steps Andrew Fifita, goes through, he's fighting through, ends up putting the ball down, and that's the play of the game right there that seals it. 14-12. Despite the fact, if Will Chambers passes on the inside, we could be here talking about something completely different. So that's how that ends there. They had some Star of Origin players, Jack Bird, Andrew Fifita, Paul Gallen, Wade Graham, James Maloney. So there's class in this side. Val Holmes would end up debuting for Australia after a dream year, scoring 19 tries. James Maloney booted 219 points home. So again, there's some world-class players in this team. And you're probably wondering, how on earth does this fall away? Well, Michael Ennis retires. Ben Barber decides to do some coke in the off-season. He gets sacked, and they lose just an edge as such. So by 2017, they again start 1-3. Parramatta fans are wondering, why do they keep doing this to us? It just happens. So from there, they end up in second position by round 10. All going swimmingly at this point, but then they come to a point where they go to a rain-soaked sea bus, and the Titans slaughter them. And then that just kicks off a downhill slope. I think Jaden Brayley might have broken his jaw earlier through, but he's back before the finals. They lose a tight game to the Roosters they needed to win in order to make top four, and then they play in the qualifying final against North Queensland. There might have been a bit of ref ball, but the Cowboys win by a point. They get their revenge after all these years, and they decide to do something with it. So 2018 hits us, And there's a few good debuts in this side. Sione Katoa and Kyle Flanagan. They recruit again really strongly. Dugan, Moylan, Scott Sorensen, who's a class player, I might add. And they also recruited Aaron Woods off the Bulldogs' hands, you might recall. They lose some experience. Hoyington goes, Matamor goes, Maloney goes, Tagatese goes, and Bird goes. Bird was kind of their strong point in attack in particular, and that kind of threw them off slightly. So they go into 2018, and they end up starting the season well, from memory. Even though the start to the season, they lost their first two games. They start the season okay. They get their drift back in the top four by round 12. They go on a little bit of a skid, but finish the season strong, winning their last four, securing a place inside the top four. Wade Graham does his ACL, or a serious leg injury against the Roosters. They lose that. They then go to Penrith. Sorry, they go back to the Sydney Football Stadium. They beat Penrith by a point, and then in Melbourne, the occasion gets them, and they lose. So by this point now, Barry Russell, who took over as the Sharks CEO, started self-reporting some salary cap breaches for the Sharks that dated back a long way. And this actually saved them a lot of consequences in the long run. So they uncovered breaches of the salary cap over years dating back to, I think, 2016. A list of proposed payments was uncovered during an investigation. These did not affect the club's premiership winning year. A $757,000 salary cap penalty was enforced. They found out Shane Flanagan had been sending more than 50 emails between him, club management, and the football department, which was strictly against his suspension from the supplement scandal. And as Reece and I were touching on before, those emails helped secure the signatures of some pretty big players. Guys like Barber, guys like Bird, guys like Ennis. So from there, the Sharks go into fever pitch. Flanagan's then later suspended again. John Morris is the head coach. And I must give Johnny Morris a rap here. I mean, obviously a lot's been said post about, oh, how he didn't get them through to a semi-final win or anything. But to me, it was always going to be unfair to place those high expectations on a rookie coach, and then you go to be, oh, it's a professional sport. There's different circumstances through developing players, and for me, one of them is you've got to be able to give them control of the offense and give them control over the side in general. Because John Morris had been operating 2019 and 2020 under a significant salary cap penalty. And what reward does a head coach have when you're working with a below-average salary cap and a below-average roster? There's none. So I think Sharks management was wrong to sack him, especially at that time. I reckon you probably could have given him 2021, give him an opportunity to work with the roster with the salary cap money. Try and secure some players. Don't just sit there and go, oh, we tried. Go out in the market and buy some players. But alas, they debuted Blake Brayley, who replaced Jaden at the end of 2020, at the end of 2019, sorry, when Jaden went to Newcastle. Will Kennedy, who's probably one of the best fullbacks in the game at the moment. Ronaldo Mortalo, been in the headlines a bit with Origin. Britton Nakora, who I think might have been Rookie of the Year in 2019. And then obviously Bronson Sherry, who before his drug ban was one of the most explosive backline players in the game. And obviously, you got the experience of guys like Paul Gallen in there. Top try scorer was Josh Morris with 16. Again, putting up good figures towards the end of the season. They finished 7th in 2019 before getting bundled out by Manly at Asbestos Land. So 2020 comes along, and obviously, there's some success off the field. Obviously, that backroom chaos with the salary cap is behind them, and they recruit and finally fill all the major spots on their jersey for sponsorship. And you think, that's amazing, that's successful. So from there, it's looking good. And you recruit some good players to come through. Jesse Raymond, you get back after an indifferent stint. Connor Tracy, who had become Mr. Fix-It for the Sharks across 2020 and 2021. Through the two rounds, meh, they went okay. But then after the restart, they lose to the Tigers before reclawing back some lost pride against them. As I'm going to use Paul Kent's terminology here, easy teams. And as Brent Reed says, he didn't beat any of the strong clubs. But you lost narrowly to the Roosters. You competitive against Penrith the second time around. You nearly beat Parramatta in the water polo match at Cogra. And then they lose to Canberra valiantly in the semi-final. So again, I don't think there's anything more that John Morris could have had to deal with there. But however, by round five and inside the logjam for the eight, John Morris was told his services are no longer required after a spectacular second half collapse against the Roosters. So my opinion on this, I mean, you know, Johnny Morris is probably a bit hard done by. He'll feel a bit hard done by here. You know, he was sacked. Craig Fitzgibbon had come in. And he'd been in the Sharks' eyes for a while now. And Craig Fitzgibbon has always been touted as this next big thing as such. And it's probably a bit bittersweet, in fact, that he's got to this point. I mean, Josh Hannay's done a good job. I mean, he started out very rocky, losing five straight. But he's bounced back really strongly, winning four of his last five. Of course, that loss on Sunday recently against the Broncos is not a strong point whatsoever. But, you know, all their games have basically been close ones. They haven't really had as many blowouts. And that's a point in rugby league that's been talked about a lot recently. And I think it's my turn to throw in my two cents worth. As I was touching on in recent banter mode, the game is turning into the 1997 World Club Challenge. And we're just going to go through, like everyone else has, the scores from the last weekend of such in rugby league. 46-0, 66-0, 46-4-6, 38-0, and 38-22. Those are the blowouts. Is that a competitive rugby league we want? No. And if you tell me that's competitive rugby league, then you're joking. The competition is realistically a two-horse race between Melbourne and Penrith. And at the moment, it's not good enough. Rugby league is, and I'm not going to say dying. It is not dying at all. Like, there just needs to be some changes brought in, especially with the reiteration of the six again rule that is ridiculous. Because what advantage does a team have when they get a six again 5 metres out from their own line? I'll tell you now, they get fuck all advantage. And it happened in the Roosters game on Friday night where they get a six again, then two tackles later, Tupou knocks on 20 out from their own line. So you're basically rewarding the other team's poor discipline. That's not what rugby league is about. That's not what it's lived about. And as Sydney is back in lockdown, no fans will be in the stadium. So we need to continue as fans to say, this isn't okay in rugby league. This is concerning. Things will get better as the more consultation Volandis has and the more that is done within rugby league to fix it at the moment. But I'm going to make the announcement right now that League Legacy's second season is concluding. As I mentioned earlier, I'm sitting my trial HSC in the next few weeks and then my HSC. After November, there will be a crap ton of content coming out. We've got a lot of fun to do. We might even do a lockdown episode, another one of these. But we have a lot of content to get through and that will be coming out hopefully over November and December. So, from Reese, before he had to leave, and myself, I thank you very much for listening, and stay safe in the lockdown if you're in it. But that'll do it from me. Bye-bye for now. Small man walking tall.